Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
You're awesome. Under the World Arch in Nome.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, that's right, the Iditarod. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and we're going to go to Nome, but before we head back to that burled arch, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod 2018 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
My friends, we have a winner, and the Iditarod has crowned a new Norwegian champion. His name, you just heard it, is your Leifseth Olsom. The 31-year-old pulled under Nome's burled arch at 3 a.m. with 8 dogs in harness this morning to claim his first championship, taking the win in Iditarod 46. This is only Olsom's 6th Iditarod, and he has finished in the top 7 in every attempt at the last great race. This year is the first time the Iditarod has been back on its southern route in 5 years. Usually the race alternates between a northern and southern route, but there were a couple years in there with low snow that caused a restart in Fairbanks instead of Willow, so Olsom's rookie run in 2013 was the last time the race has been on the southern route. His rise to Iditarod champion has been swift since that 2013 rookie year, when he took 7th place and rookie of the year. Olsom also set the record for all-time fastest rookie in 2013, a record he still holds, with a race time of 9 days, 12 hours, and 34 minutes. This year, he was only about a half hour faster, with a total race time of 9 days and 12 hours even. And here's where I want to play some more tape of the live radio broadcast from KNOM as Olsom's team mushed up Front Street in Nome this morning.
And here comes your Leifseth Olsom. Let's go on down to Front Street and see what's happening. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, David. Well, it is quite full here on Front Street. The crowd is gathering closer, milling on the sidewalks. You can hear some chirping, some trills as we await your Olsom's arrival on Front Street. I'm standing here with our news director, Davis Hovey. Davis, you were on the trail. You saw your... Lots of excitement here. What was his team looking like, Davis, when he was on the trail?
Margaret, well, I think, you know, a big thing for Yor was how long he kept 13 of his dogs. He started this race with 16. He had 13 for most of the way, all the way into Koyuk, and he's now coming into this finish line in the finish chute here in Nome under the burled arch with 8 dogs. So I'd be happy to ask him that when he gets here. Why he chose to run in with these particular 8 dogs, and we'll find out in moments.
He is approaching City Hall already, and looks like the dogs keep swerving back and forth towards the crowd. They're about to come up to the chute entrance. And the team, they're swerving to the right, to the left. We're getting directed here to move to the side of the chute as he starts to enter. Bright spotlights pointed toward the burled arch on Front Street. It looks like he got off his sled and is starting to lead the team by hand. As they're getting a little confused with the crowd. The crowd is stretched all the way down the street close to the state office building on Front Street in Nome. And here they go straight into the chute. Your Olsom under the burled arch in Nome. And the first nose is across. The dogs look happy and cheerful.
And of course, his race clock stops when the first dog's nose crosses the finish line. Olsom's win makes him the first Norwegian musher to win the 1,000-mile sled dog race since Robert Sorley in 2005. Amid a raucous crowd and speaking over the PA system, Olsom explains Sorley's huge influence.
It's been a dream for me since he won it, and I've always been watching him racing, and it's just, it feels good.
Olsom's 2018 championship comes after a major shakeup on Monday when Girdwood musher Nicholas Petit, then in the lead, took a wrong turn down a stretch of trail on the Bering Sea coast between Shaktulik and Koyuk. There were strong northerly winds at the time and a ground storm that were slamming the coast, reducing visibility. Petit told reporters he thought his dogs might have followed an older trail. The mistake ultimately cost him about an hour and a half to get back on course, and it allowed Olsom to take the lead, which he maintained for the remainder of the 200-plus miles to Nome. Olsom mushed almost nonstop from Koyuk to Elim Monday night, and while Petit was only a couple miles behind out of Koyuk, he stopped to rest his dogs along the way. Olsom then stopped in Elim only a few minutes early Tuesday morning. Petit rested his team in Elim and was about 3 hours behind Olsom out of that checkpoint. In Nome, our friend and fellow reporter Davis Hovey caught up with Olsom. In this interview, Olsom starts off saying he didn't know how close Petit was to him coming out of Koyuk.
When I left Koyuk, he was sleeping or pretending to be sleeping, so I had no idea he was coming out right behind me there.
And as was mentioned, you know, you dropped quite a few dogs, five between Koyuk and the finish line here. How did you make the decision to come in with these eight under the finish line here in Nome?
Well, these were the eight dogs that was really eager to go, and the other dogs, they've done an awesome job, and they brought the team here as well, and I couldn't have done it without them, so I'm really happy with all the dogs that ran the race.
Congratulations on getting here first, Joran. I mean, what were the biggest challenges out there for you on the trail?
Well, it was a slow trail, a soft trail, we had wind, and it was just, every leg was more challenging than the other, I felt like.
Congratulations, welcome to Nome.
Thank you.
So Olsom arrived in White Mountain at about 7:50 a.m. yesterday for a mandatory 8-hour rest before that final push to Nome. Petit was about 3 hours 30 minutes behind at that point, but Olsom's lead was pretty much locked in. Petit arrived in Nome in second place at 5:15 a.m. with 10 dogs, so he made up some time going from 3 hours 30 minutes back to being behind by only a little over 2 hours. His total race time was 9 days, 14 hours, and 15 minutes. Petit sat down in the mini convention center with reporters including KNOM's Ben Matheson and Anchorage Daily News reporter Tegan Hanlon to answer questions about how his race went and when it went wrong. It's kind of a long interview, but we think that Petit is pretty entertaining, and it's a pretty good mix of mushing questions and personal answers. Here you go.
I think you surprised a few people, Nick, by how fast you showed up here from White Mountain and from safety. How is that team performing over these 77 miles?
I don't know why that's a surprise. My team's been the fastest on the trail from Anchorage all the way to the wrong turn. We went fast on the wrong turn, and then we slowed down at the end of that, because we went an extra 10 miles through some really soft, punchy, weird stuff looking for a trail. So who's surprised that I'm fast?
You were just faster than the musher before you, so people weren't totally out as early as they thought they had to be.
Yeah, probably faster than what's coming too. Mm-hmm. That's a fast dog team. All I did at safety is say, home, 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 and they went. Themselves.
How did you communicate with the team after you got turned around on that trail going up to Koyuk, and how do you manage the sort of mental state of the team at that point?
Shut up. Say good dogs. That's about it. Yeah. The more you talk, the more you fry their brains. So try to not talk too much. But then when I start talking, it's like, good dog and stuff like that, and G and Ha. So there was a lot of G and Ha when I was looking for the trail and backtracking, and I heard about open water before the race, and I wasn't going to go seek the trail out too far to the west, so I looked to the west a little bit, didn't see anything. Went east, figured maybe I'll find that overland trail they talked about. I got to the place on the GPS that says there's a trail, but I did loops and there's no trail where there's a trail on the GPS. So then I turned them around, G'd them around, potted them around, and went back where same direction I came from, just still looking for a trail. Eventually I saw a trail marker. Got on that trail, and this is how few trail markers there were. I get back on that trail. On one side, I see a trail marker way far, way out there. On the other side, you don't see one. You probably should be able to see a couple trail markers. as you're going across a known blowing piece of ice. So, par for the course, I guess.
How do you manage your own mental state when it's at that stage in the race? You know, there's not a lot of sleep at that point. How do you manage yourself?
I sleep more than most of the mushers. The long runs I do mean longer rests too at checkpoints. And then the little camps on the river, I slept a good hour at each little camp on the river, just sleeping with the leaders. And my dogs do the work of moving forward, so I'm not physically sore like others maybe. I don't change my run of plastic. It's the same stuff we started with. I send out extra just in case I need to, but that's a lot of work that I don't really like to waste my time and energy with. So it makes for a more rested musher. And I let the dogs do the work on the trail, so I help once in a while. Just might get bored or cold, but that's about it.
How do you feel about the race overall? You're in Nome now, trail's behind you. When you reflect back, how do you feel about the race you and your team did?
Good luck keeping up. My dog team's proving that we have to have a major problem in order to not get to a finish line first. So, no, it's an awesome team, and looking forward to doing it next year again. Hey, we keep improving every year, so there's still room for improvement.
When will you begin training for the next race?
On the couch when we get home.
How are you feeling right now, Nick? How did you feel? What was going through your head when you were coming down Front Street this year?
Police escort school. I've been here before where nobody there because I'm too early and nobody ready to have me come in. There's nice snow on the road. Nice fast end of the trail, you know, so they didn't have to slow down to get to the finish line. I like to roll into checkpoints full speed ahead and come to a complete stop. So it was kind of like that coming in here. Of course, people clapping and stuff. That's cool for them. They like commotion.
Back in Anvik, you were the first to really get your 8-hour Yukon rest out of the way. How did you come to that decision to spend those 8 hours in Anvik and maybe avoid some of the troubles that other mushers had with Eagle Island?
Well, there's a nice dinner there. And a little extra 20-mile push or whatever that is from going through Shagluck isn't a big deal. I knew it was going to make me run in the heat of the day at some point, but it would set me up to do a short run in the heat of the day, come to Grayling, we'll give him some water, load up the sled with enough supplies to go 120 miles, and then have a lot of nighttime running then. So that was, I figure if I'm going to run in the sun, when there's a checkpoint, well, maybe I run in the sun and give him a break right in the middle of the checkpoint and then go back out again. And then the other thing it did is those guys ended up getting on that long run after I got on it. So I got to see what they were working with. But, you know, how I'd already seen Mitch's dogs. And that gave me a little bit of confidence about our upcoming performance. Not to say anything derogatory about Mitch's dog team, but a bunch of tails in the air. So, and not as... My dog team's very smooth, and, like, they don't... When we go faster, like this, but 9-10 miles an hour, they're just really smooth and flat and don't really use that much energy. And dog team that doesn't trot that well is going to use more energy. And so I could tell that I had a more efficient duck team than Mitch did. And yours, I hadn't seen yet, but I hadn't seen it yet. So I camped on the river, and one of them went by while I was sleeping, and then here comes your. And I got on right after he went. And usually dogs, you know, they wake up, and then you move slow, and then they pick up speed. And that's how they did it, my dogs. But while we were moving slow, we caught up to your. Then we started picking up speed, and we flew by an inch. So I thought, you know, I think I've got the dog team that's going to win if I do everything right.
You know, Mitch always talks about having a really strict speed limit and enforcing the speed limit, but, I mean, it sounds like you're a little bit more free with letting the dog sometimes give you feedback on speed. How do you, you know, make the decision on exactly how fast to go?
Well, instead of holding them back and making them pull extra resistance that they don't need to, I'm the guy that does the long runs earlier in the race. And that's to calm them down so that they're not putting out more energy than we need to travel with at a speed that's reasonable. And then if they want to roll and the trail's suitable, then let them go. So instead of conserving energy by wasting it on the drag, I conserve energy by going a long ways and getting them calm. And then we can go, that's just no break, just go at a good speed.
Girdwood musher Nick Petit there talking to reporters in Nome's mini convention center after finishing second in the Iditarod this year. And as I'm recording this Wednesday morning, the only other musher to arrive, he was in third place, was defending champion Mitch Seavey. He got into Nome this morning a little after 8. Meantime, three mushers scratched from the race yesterday. That's Tuesday. Chugiak musher Tom Schoenberger scratched between the Grayling and Eagle Island checkpoints, Eagle Island actually being downgraded to just a hospitality stop. In any case, he scratched between Grayling and Eagle Island. At last report, he was heading back to Grayling with his team with help from the Iditarod Trail Sweepers. With Schoenberger out, it's now a toss-up for the Red Lantern today, with Tara Ciccatello and Steve Watkins mushing pretty close together, but still not into Caltag. The other two scratches yesterday, Two Rivers' Alan Moore pulled out at Caltag, citing personal health issues, and Willow musher Wade Mars scratched at Koyuk after his dogs were reluctant to leave the checkpoint. Mars' Facebook page says also that he may have been coming down with pneumonia. I don't know Tom, but we hope he's doing okay, and we hope Wade and Alan get healthy quick. Wade, we would have thought, would have been somewhere in the top 10, but still definitely an up-and-comer and becoming an elite musher in the Iditarod, and Alan mushing a puppy team. And before we get too bummed out about scratches, we've also got a pup, if you will, a young race fan anyway, with today's listener question.
Hello, my name is Roan Gage, and I'm from Cotsview, and I would like to know where the word Iditarod came from.
Hi, Roan Gage in Kotzebue. What a great question, and thank you so much for asking it, because I can't believe we've never answered it or addressed it on the podcast before. So the word Iditarod refers to the town of Iditarod that was founded in 1910 and kind of grew up around this big gold strike that happened in the middle of Alaska at that area and close by in Flat. The name comes from what was called the Iditarod River, a tributary of the Anoka River nearby. And the word Iditarod comes from how English speakers tried to pronounce or adapt the Deghitan Athabascan word for that river, closer to Haidarod or Haidalatna. And according to some accounts, the translation of that word is the distant place. So the word Iditarod means a couple of things. It means the distant place, it refers to a river, and at one point it was the name of a town. It also then became the name of the trail that passed through the town of Iditarod, connecting Seward all the way to Nome, which was used for mail deliveries mostly for a period of time in the 1910s and 20s. So thank you, Roni. Great question. Bye.
No, thank you, Zachariah Hughes with Alaska Public Media, our reporter on the trail. Zach is on his way to Nome today after the plane he had been flying in got weathered into Unalakleet, then weathered in again at Koyuk. He was actually sleeping on the school library floor in Koyuk while the finish was happening. So it's been a hectic, sometimes frustrating time for all of us. But we do appreciate his good work out there. In any case, we'll have more interviews and analysis of how Yor won this race tomorrow, hopefully more from other mushers coming in as well. And tomorrow will probably be our last of these daily podcasts on the Ididapod. I imagine we'll be wrapping things up, but we are approaching the end of this podcast for this year, my friends. So that's all we have time for today. You can still find us on iTunes and many other podcatcher apps, or as always, listen online at alaskapublic.org. That's where the rest of our Iditarod coverage is. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.
Casey, I'm digging through the trash because I wanted to tell you what I ate for dinner tonight. We got weathered into Koyuk, and for dinner we went to the store, and I think they're called chimichangas, but they're basically like frozen burritos. So I ate two of those and a package of ramen noodles and a cookie. But that was me trying to find the wrapper in the garbage so I could tell you more specifically, but I can't find it. So I hope you're doing well, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to be there for the finish, but I'm surviving in Koyuk and should get there tomorrow. So, okay. See you later. Bye.